Wongarali Majinu. This is Sunday Brunch with Kim Hoon on ABC Radio, Canberra Wurundjeri.
So on the Sunday Brunch Out of This World special, we're going to end it, well, with a blast. We're going to blast into the future, and it'll be a thrilling trip, but not necessarily a relaxing or easy one, because the future is dark and it's a troubling place full of misfits and mishap and $50 scoops of ice cream. So says T.R. Napper. He's an award-winning science fiction author. His short stories have appeared in all the big sci-fi publications and in lots of different languages. He's been described by people who know as by far the closest contemporary science fiction writer to Philip K. Dick of Blade Runner and Minority Report, amongst other books fame. And I'm pleased to say that Tim Napper joins me now in the studio. G'day, Tim.
Wow, what an intro, Kim. G'day. It's great to be here.
No, it's a real pleasure. It's a big interview for this little show, Sunday Brunch, to have you here. You've just returned from a book tour that included these supernova events throughout the country. What was that like?
Supernova is the biggest pop cultural convention in the country. So they get thousands and thousands of people through the door. They do six stops around Australia. Unfortunately, they don't stop here in Canberra. And basically, it's this glorious parallel universe where geeks rule. They can cosplay, meet celebrities, where they can find kindred spirits from whatever obscure subculture of science fiction or anime or comics and be completely accepted and completely welcome. Now, for writers like me, we're kind of at the bottom of the totem pole. When you look at the guest list for these things, it goes actors, then voice actors, then comic book artists, and then down the bottom, just above guests that have cancelled, you get writers.
But surely it's still a blast. Were people lining up? I've seen pictures of people lining up.
Oh, look, I'm talking the writing part down, but it's surreal because you become, for a weekend, this celebrity and people are getting, you're signing your books and you're talking about the things you love and you're talking about reading, and it's energizing.
And it's not the worst thing to be a writer that's not recognised. That's part of the reason people write, right? Because you've got stuff of substance to talk about, but you don't have to be a crazy huge celebrity. Or do you want to be the crazy huge celebrity?
No, I don't want to be a crazy huge celebrity, no. But you're right, except for, unless you're George R.R. Martin or, you know, Margaret Atwood or something, no one knows who you are. And as we were talking about just briefly before I went on, cyberpunk, which I write, it tends to be a bit more niche. So I'm certainly I don't have, except for Supernova, I don't have any celebrity status.
But that popped my bubble too. I understand if you do genre fiction and some niche industries, you can make a lot of coin as an author as opposed to most writing.
So in writing as a whole is getting tougher and tougher. Year in, year out. Advances are falling. Audiences are becoming splintered. It's really tough for Australian writers. It's almost like there's the middle class has been, the middle or the mid list of writers has been eliminated, and you either have people sort of grinding it out at the bottom or you go to superstar status. So yes, when I go to Supernova and when I go to events, there'll be writers there who have just taken off, say in the States or the UK, and they're huge. But it's really rare now these days in the publishing industry.
Sci-fi author Tim Napper, he's a local, but he's just come back from Supernova tour around Australia. You're promoting your novel 36 Streets. It's been described as noir, cyberpunk and Asian modernity. What's not to like? How would you describe it, Tim Napper?
It's science fiction set in Vietnam in the year 2100. It imagines a world where the US has collapsed and China is the sole superpower. I'll give you my Supernova pitch, Kim. So when people came up to me at the convention, this is what I said. It's high tech, low lives. Gunfights, gangsters, martial arts, a military occupation. Mind-bending tech, weaponized for social control. But at the heart of it all, Lin Tivu, our damaged protagonist, trying to solve a murder at the heart of a global conspiracy.
What a plug. I wish I could say that about anything or even come close to saying that about anything in my work or in my life. But Tim Napper's telling us about his 36 streets, and it's based on a place I know well, the Old Quarter in Hanoi. It's almost indescribable place. I lived there for quite a while. It's low-tech, high-tech. It's out of this world. It's gritty. It's everything.
You're right. I lived there for 3 years in the old quarter. And it was just as I started becoming a writer. This was about a decade ago. And it is a frenetic, vivid, overwhelming place with this rich and deep history. And it can't help but imprint itself on you, I think. I was deeply, just as an individual, I was deeply impacted by living there. But as a writer, you have to write about it, I think. I've been fascinated with Vietnam for a very long time, but living there for 3 years was absolutely a huge influence on me and my writing.
And you're living there, you work in the foreign aid sector.
Mm.
You're a diplomat for a good decade, as I understand, living overseas. What's going on there? Is there a conflict or contradiction between you being absorbed in your work by charity and aid and then your stories are full of ruthless cage fighters?
On the surface, there doesn't seem to be a lot in common.
Maybe the aid industry is ruthless. I don't know.
It can be. It's not ruthless, but it can be pretty cynical sometimes. On the surface, there's not much connection at all between being a science fiction writer and being an aid worker. You'd say there's very little, except what I write is cyberpunk. And so when I was working in aid, I was working in, the rural areas of Laos, for example, and these are some of the most dispossessed and marginalized people on Earth. Mm. Cyberpunk is very much a radical, or can be a very radical form of science fiction literature. I call it the literature of defiance. And it very much takes the side of the dispossessed. It's punk. It's there in the title. Mm. So if it's punk, it means it's anti-authoritarian, anti-elite, it's countercultural. It has a raised fist against the forces that would marginalize, dehumanize, and try and control. So I think that the focus of my work has been those at the margins, and this is in the subgenre of cyberpunk, that is very much one of the thematic concerns of that type of work. So in that sense, I think my focus has been the same, even though it's radically different ways. Mm. One is working in the field, one is sitting in my writer cave troll room and by myself, typing up these stories.
Now, what an incredible insight into cyberpunk and the politics of it. So playing off that idea about the politics of your work, I note that your writing's been praised because the violence is also works together with silence and times to sit and contemplate the meaning of that violence too, where it comes from and the effects of it.
Violence as spectacle is easy. Mm. Violence is something that has consequences for the victim and for the perpetrator is very hard. And let me give you an example. The Star Wars franchise is by far the most bloodthirsty in cinema. They're blowing up planets every other film. Mm. A billion people probably on average die in every one of those films. But there's no consequence. It's all for spectacle. It's all for entertainment. And in a way, that violence is empty. Now, don't get me wrong. I like spectacle. I like an action film. But that has no meaning. Whereas in my book, maybe a 2 or 3 dozen people might get killed. But all that violence has meaning, right? But the best science fiction, I think, plays a double game. And the double game is, on the one hand, you've got cool gadgets and you're enthralling the reader and you're making them want to turn the page. But on the other hand, you're exploring some deeper and more profound ideas. So in the book, one of those ideas is colonialism and war. You can't talk about these things without talking about the psychological consequences. You can't have this empty spectacle violence. So I think for me, working in aid and then thinking about these issues, I think, you can't ignore the trauma of violence. And this is something that I don't turn away from in the novel.
Yeah, it's so real, your work. Particularly 36 Streets, there's people who are intergenerationally are suffering trauma.
Mm.
They're Vietnamese. You say you work in real life with people from Cambodia. So there's incredible realness and nowness to your futuristic work. That's part of the quality, T.R. Napa. So let's tease out some of that realness. I note that it's sometimes said that sci-fi reveals something about the present. So the other day I read A Strange Loop, one of your short stories in Neon Leviathan, and I was just enthralled by the protagonist is Irving, and he sells his memory to a company. It's called Thanks for the Memories, a memory extraction service.
Mm.
And I couldn't help but think, I couldn't pick it out, but I knew that there was something deep there about the present. What does that practice say about the present, selling your memories?
Oh, right. Well, I did write that story a long time ago, but to the first part of your question, Ursula Le Guin, who's one of the great science fiction writers, says, science fiction is not predictive, it's descriptive.
Oh.
So what we're really talking about is the present. But we're extrapolating on from the present. And so the novel 36 Streets, I'm certainly extrapolating upon current political events and current technologies and seeing where they may go. Now, with that particular story, on the one hand, the protagonist is in this short story is in a strange loop, is a pretty pathetic individual. He's not a very good father. He's not a very good husband. But on the other hand, he's desperate to make things right with his family. And so what I think I was getting at there is just how our desperation is a resource that the rich can benefit from to give pieces of ourselves away that are fundamental to us. Fundamental, but are merely just entertainment for them. And, you know, we are day in, day out, if you think about our smartphones, we are the product. We are getting our data extracted all the time. We're being manipulated.
And we're outsourcing our memory skills, our mind.
We are. We are. That's a whole fascinating topic of discussion called cognitive offloading, where if you become so used to relying on your smartphone for getting your information and for reminding you of things, there are studies that show your natural memory function actually can start to atrophy.
Yeah, scary, particularly when you look at our kids. I wonder, Tim Napper, you're writing, that's your profession. You write during the week, you do it for money, you're a sci-fi author, cyberpunk noir. Can you get too grim? I know that one of your characters despises another in your short stories for listening to John Lennon's Imagine, and he says the only people that think nations don't matter are those living in the safety of one, and very, very grim outlook on the future. Okay, do you ever sit back and you're writing something and say, no, this is too grim, I can't do this?
You do have to think about that. Well, firstly, in that story, I just wanted to have a crack at the song Imagine because I find it unbearable. Remember during the pandemic where the celebrities were singing Imagine?
And, don't. Well, the people love that song.
And so there's an Australian in that story and he's giving a hard time to his American commander about liking that song. But no, it's an important question because you don't, when you, as a reader, I always think about what do I want to read? And I do want to read science fiction that's exciting, and but also that makes me think, and that is clear-eyed about, say, poverty and war and so forth. But I don't want it to be relentlessly grim. You do want that leaven by humour. You want this, or the spark of rebellion, or love, even if it's a doomed love. Mm. So I think it's like, but humour, for example, is an important one. The reader can't just sit there in this the bleak darkness of the near future on those rain-washed neon-lit streets and not have any respite. Mm. Of course, so yeah, I absolutely think about this question because if you're a storyteller, you always think about what's the best way to tell this story? What's the best right way to engage the reader? And relentless bleakness turns most people off. Even me, and I love, and clearly I'm writing in this genre, so I love it.
You've lived all over the world. It's inspired your sci-fi, Tim Napper, but you're a Canberran and you've lived through pandemics, fires, floods and financial hardship. Is that all grist for the mill for you? Are you happy with that or has it inspired your work?
Climate change, I think, is inspiring or influencing a lot of science fiction writers.
Yeah.
It can't help but do it. And here in Australia, we see the extremes. And so I think that it sort of works its way into my world building. So I normally live in Southeast Asia. I lived in Australia for a couple of years and then we used to go back. And so we've had to stay here through the pandemic. And I think the pandemic's focused me on Australia. So all my other work's set in Southeast Asia, as you know. But I'm actually started writing a novel which is not science fiction, which is fantasy, and which is using convict culture as the basis for creating a new world. Like, what would a world be like where 80% of the people are convicts, and then building a fantasy world from that? So that's actually influenced me by being kept here in Australia. Yeah.
We'll have to get you back on Sunday Brunch to chat about that one. For now, it's been a real honour and pleasure. Thanks for coming on Sunday Brunch and telling us all about your sci-fi worlds, Tim Napper.
Thank you for having me in, Kim. It's great to see you.
ABC Radio Canberra. Streaming now at abc.net.au/Canberra.